Welcome, MAV Radio listeners, to this year's 13th annual Haunted Heartland. My name is Wyatt Lair. I'm here with
the one and only Juliet Eckler.
And this year, we got a good line of stories up for you all back at home, from just trends of Halloween to Vala's, a staple of Halloween here in Omaha, and a bunch of other great stories for you this year. Juliet, I don't know about you, but every year Halloween comes around, obviously we see a lot of costumes come and go. You got your staples, your Marvel superheroes, that kind of stuff. This year I'm expecting a lot of celebrity costumes, Chapel Roan, Sabrina Carpenter.
Oh, yeah.
Any sort of costumes you're looking at this year?
You know, I feel like people like those blow-up costumes, the ones where you could be like the dinosaur, like you could be like riding the dinosaur. I feel like people really like those ones a lot. That's probably what I'm going to be seeing the most of.
Yeah, those classic, like it was big when Among Us was out. You know Among Us.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Those big ones were a big trend back then. You see a lot of the mascots too in sports and stuff. They got those big blow-up Halloween costumes sort of. But yeah, this year we're expecting a lot of great stories. Halloween always comes around. We got some stories about some movies and things like that, classic Halloween movies. You got any favorites this year that you'll be listening into?
Oh, man, I mean, my go-to usually is Scream. Mm. Just the OG. I do like Halloween, too. I do like Nightmare Before Christmas.
Really?
Which I think is a Halloween movie. Agree to disagree. It's a Halloween movie.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
It's a classic. I think Halloween movies, honestly, it's like Christmas. It's like, I feel like half of the year is spent.
It's revolved around the movies.
It's just revolved around the movies. I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but I feel like you can't go Halloween without at least turning on one classic Halloween movie.
Oh, no doubt. What's your favorite one?
That's a tough question. You know, honestly, I'm just going to have to go with, you know, just some classic Jason Voorhees.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll mess with that. Yeah, I think it's not hard to just turn on a movie and just watch a guy who doesn't say anything, but just goes around and kind of does whatever he wants and is invincible.
There's something ominous about that.
There's something very, it's you know, not cathartic, but it's enjoyable to watch.
I
feel like Halloween is that time of year where you can let loose and you not be worried about being judged for those sort of bad things that might not be very acceptable in other circumstances. Yeah, but so far, we are about to hop into this year's stories. Got a good lineup for you all. Real quick, we're going to have a quick break before we get into these year's stories.
16 reporters, one chilly night of storytelling. You're listening to Haunted Heartland 2024.
This fall, Head Start is bringing the community together for their annual Fall Festival, where families can enjoy fun activities and connect with resources. Live French tells us more about how this event strengthens the community and supports growth.
It's a night filled with fall-themed games, arts and crafts, and plenty of fun for the families enrolled in the Head Start program. Jill French, the event coordinator and health and nutrition specialist assistant, tells us how the Fall Festival is something kids and families look forward to every year.
Fall Festival is an event that we plan every fall for families that are enrolled in our program. It's supposed to be a fun night for families to come and get information from community partners and have fun as well.
The evening will be full of lots of fun with seasonal activities for families and children to do.
Our teachers will set up games that are fall themed, such as pumpkin painting, pumpkin bowling. We do bobbing for apples, have them do arts and crafts that are fall themed with leaves.
Each year, the Fall Festival offers something unique that families will remember long after the event.
One year we had a teacher duo that planned a photo booth for our families. They had lots of fun props and they were taking lots of fun pictures, and the families, when they saw the pictures afterward, were laughed and thought they were silly.
Health, safety, nutrition, and education are also key components of the Fall Festival. Adama Salvadogo, the Head Start Health, Safety, and Nutrition Specialist, talks about the many resources that will be offered.
So the Fall Festival is like a resource fair where we brought many vendors from the different community, from different background, health insurance, we have safety, we have people who's doing nutrition, we have education, all those services will be present.
For Adama, the Fall Festival is personal. He was once a Head Start parent himself and shares how events like these helped his own family.
I was a Head Start parent before I became even employee for Head Start. Going to those kind of activities, I find a lot of resources. So things that I didn't know before, meeting new health providers and know how insurance work, like is really, really beneficial for our grand participants.
Families will leave the festival with valuable resources, as Sawadogo explains.
So the takeaway is making sure each parent who come to this event go home with resources that they need, or even share that with the community member.
We hope that they will find a vendor with a community resource that is very valued to them. We hope that they connect with other families to get a sense of community, and we just hope they have fun playing our fall games with the teachers.
The Head Start Festival is an event where families can enjoy seasonal activities while accessing valuable community resources. Events like these not only bring the community together, but encourage families to invest in their children's learning and development, which has been shown to create lasting benefits. For MavRadio.fm, this is Maya French.
It's clear this event is more than just fun and games. It's a chance for families to gather resources and build lasting connections with the community. It also supports growth for children involved. According to the NHSA, children participating in events like these have been shown to have better social skills, impulse control, and approaches to learning. All right, so in studio right now, I have my wonderful friend, Maya.
Hello.
So, Maya, what stands out to you about this event and its impact on the community?
It's such a good opportunity for families of all walks of life to go and connect with other families and to connect with resources. Like they even said in the story, they find resources that they didn't even know were available, and they get to see each other outside of school, which I think is huge and builds a huge community network for them and supports a lot of growth.
Yeah, and then what are some of those key takeaways for families who attend?
They will walk away knowing that they have the support of their community with them. They have all these resources there to back them up. They have the teachers, they have all the staff at Head Start. Families gain like quality time engaging in the different activities, and it just brings joy in the fall time. Some of these families might be less fortunate and not have an opportunity to do things like this.
All right, and then how do events like these kind of strengthen the community connection?
Like I said before, there's all these different resources they have available for them, and they get to see each other, so they're strengthening their community and within themselves.
All right, thank you so much, Maya.
Yeah.
For our next story, our next reporter, Abigail Gosek, will be walking us through, like we said, horror movies. Around this time of year, once the leaves start changing, they start falling from the trees, there's nothing like turning on the TV, get some spooky season vibes going, and the autumn chill is no match for the spine-tingling thrills of horror movies. And so the new horror films of this season will bring a lot more of those memories and those classics. Obviously, the new Beetlejuice movie just came out this past month or so. So a lot of new classics coming out, and October is a popular time for watching these horror movies. Let's go in with Abigail and see how these horror movies are made and why they're so popular around this time of year.
A good scare has drawn in audiences across countless generations to horror entertainment. In 2023, horror was the fourth top-grossing film genre within North America, according to a report by The Numbers. Longtime horror fan Isabella Petty recalls her first experience with the genre.
I think the first horror movie I saw was The Exorcist. I was in third grade, so probably about 8. I thought it was really boring. My dad like told me it was gonna be really scary, and so I was like so anxious, and I watched it and I was like, oh.
Horror films have many subgenres, such as psychological horror, slasher, found footage, and many more to tackle various fears in different ways. According to CSP Global, psychologist Glenn D. Walters lists tension, relevance, and unrealism as the three primary factors for interest in horror films. Directors and producers purposely instill tension in viewers, driven by irrelevant fear, such as death, that is eased with the knowledge that the unrealism presented within the film is indeed fake and simply entertainment.
Honestly, I haven't really felt scared from one. I just think the gore and the effects are really cool, so I kind of watched it out of almost an artistic viewpoint, I guess you could say.
Alina Vanderjagt, another horror fan, also recalls watching her first horror film as a child. Although originally frightened, she eventually began to enjoy horror films a few years later.
I watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre when I was 5. I kind of dissociated all of that. I like the slasher horror movies, like Scream.
Fear activates the fight-or-flight response in people as they watch horror films. Sociologist Dr. Margie Kay told the Huffington Post that experiencing something frightening can cause the viewer to feel a sense of accomplishment once they realize that they are safe, which can become almost addicting. Isabella says that her interest in horror films led to her current favorite.
I feel like the one that lately I've been really hung up on is Terrifier 2 specifically. I love that movie because the effects are so, so good.
Like any other genre, horror films have evolved steadily throughout the years. Audiences in 1922 shuddered to see a vampire creeping in the shadows in the silent film Nosferatu. Corpses rose on screen in 1968 in The Night of the Living Dead, and children grappled with demonic possession in the 1973 film Exorcist. Modern horror films use this foundation of classic themes and tropes to appeal to common fears while introducing original storytelling aspects. Alina, bartender at ACX Exarban Theater, says the horror films of this Halloween season are already popular among guests.
We have Terrifier 3, and then this upcoming weekend, Smile 2 comes out. A lot of my customers, when I'm bartending, are for the more popular movies, which is Terrifier, and I assume Smile will bring a lot of customers as well.
Today's average moviegoer for horror films varies drastically based on subgenre or film rating. Beetlejuice Beetlejuice, sequel to the beloved 1988 film released in September of this year with a rating of PG-13, allows for a more diverse, potentially younger crowd at theaters. In comparison, Smile 2, a film that just released this month with a rating of R, will likely draw a more mature audience, who may expect a more serious, sinister tone.
It's mostly young adults, the horror movies, because you don't see the older generation of people or people with young kids coming see horror movies that much. And on actual Halloween, we are open. It's just very slow because no one wants to see a movie.
With Halloween right around the corner, horror films are just one way to celebrate the spooky season. From nostalgic childhood Halloween specials to unnervingly frightening films, horror entertainment can be enjoyed by just about anyone. After all, Halloween is never complete without a good scare. From MavRadio.fm, I'm Abigail Gosek.
As the New York Film Society states, of all the film genres out there, perhaps horror is the one that survives the most on word of mouth. Across cultures and histories, tales of fright and terror have lingered within storytelling. The history of horror films is full of fascinating innovation and creativity. Halloween is never complete without a good scare. Joining me now is reporter Abigail Gosek. Abigail, what is your favorite horror film?
I have to say my favorite horror film is probably the original Halloween from 1978, the classic and the first one I ever saw.
And can you elaborate a little bit more on the history of horror films?
Yeah, so horror as a film genre really took form in the 1930s. The first horror film started off as art films, actually, depicting famous examples of gothic literature such as Frankenstein or Dracula. And as for more modern horror films, Psycho from 1960 is considered to be one of the first examples of modern horror as we know it today.
And what are some popular horror films among people of your age?
So the classmates that I asked have a lot of classics like Scream or The Conjuring or Texas Chainsaw Massacre, as well as some newer films such as the Terrifier series or A Quiet Place came up quite a lot actually as well.
Nice. Thank you, Abigail. So coming up next for our next story, we will have Katie Gomez talking about emergency rooms.
Mav Radio
90.7 KVNO HD2, Omaha's true college radio station. Power with Mav Radio.
Power with Mav Radio. Power with Mav Radio.
As Halloween night begins to approach, and while many of us still are ready to go trick-or-treating or attending spooky parties, emergency rooms across the country are preparing for a different kind of scare. Reporter Katie Gomez informs the people of the dangers of Halloween night.
Halloween isn't just about fun and frights. It's one of the busiest nights of the year for hospitals, from allergic reactions to overindulgence and accidents. Emergency room visits spike on this haunted holiday. Sheridan Bolter knows this firsthand. She's a care tech in the ER at UNMC. Sheridan says the doctors and staff typically see a spike in emergency room-related visits during the Halloween season.
So my role, I kind of help with the emergencies, take people to like scans and stuff. We, as techs, we do CPR when we have patients who are coding. We are responsible for knowing where all of like important supplies are in the ER, like arterial line kits, central line kits.
Working in the ER is a demanding and fast-paced job, but as we head into Halloween weekend, the workload changes dramatically. Sheridan says the typical demographic she sees in Omaha's ER is high school and college-aged students.
I feel like we get a lot of like party-related incidents, car accidents involving drunk drivers, people coming in with like alcohol poisoning. Violence could also have played a big part. We get a lot of gunshot victims or stab victims, college level ages or like high school to college levels. Obviously that kind of party range. I feel like Halloween weekend in those age groups is a lot of times used to like dress up and go party and drink a lot, and that definitely plays a part in like the population that we see.
Halloween brings its own set of dangers. And it's not just the older kids. Trick-or-treating can also pose significant risk for younger children. Sheridan says parents should be on the lookout for safety concerns.
For children, I feel like a lot of parents, especially like recently or like within the last few years, parents get really comfortable with like letting children trick-or-treat from afar. Halloween specifically is a very dangerous time to do that because, I mean, everybody knows that kids are out trick-or-treating, so it could be a very easy time for them to get abducted or assaulted. Say like safety advice for parents of children, young children, is if you're gonna let your kids go trick-or-treat at all, you should always have an adult with them.
That is crucial advice. In addition to keeping a close eye on younger children, Halloween also presents a huge risk for drunk driving accidents. Sheridan emphasizes the importance of safety for college students as well.
You should never drink and drive. We have super high populations of drunk drivers that cause fatal accidents. Even recently, we've had a lot of fatal car accidents, and a lot of the times the driver that caused it is drunk.
According to the CDC, Halloween can pose certain safety risks in the U.S., particularly for pedestrians and young children, as the combination of increased foot traffic, evening hours, and sometimes impaired drivers can lead to accidents. However, with proper precautions such as adult supervision, using reflective materials, and adhering to traffic rules, these risks can be significantly minimized, ensuring a safer experience for everyone involved. For MavRadio.fm, I'm Katie Gomez.
All right, and I'm joined with Katie. Katie, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. So first and foremost, how can we learn more about to stay safe during the Halloween season?
Yeah, well, I think Sheridan touched on some great topics, but I think one thing to really emphasize is just really observing your surroundings always and kind of using that common sense that you already have instilled within you, like knowing what areas you're going to be in. If you're a parent, always watching your kids, and if you're going out and partying with your friends, you need to come up with a plan on how you guys are going to stay safe for the night.
Yeah, for sure. Why do dangers increase on this day in particular?
I think dangers increase just because it could be with any holiday, but Halloween in particular, it's a fun time for people to dress up and just go out and do something fun. So I think that just means more people being out, like Sheridan said, more pedestrians being out could cause more car crashes, and more drunk people being out could cause fatal car accidents. So just a lot of people being out in the area could definitely cause more danger.
Yeah, absolutely. And last but not least, why do people become more prone to dangerous activities?
Yeah. So, I mean, kind of like I said also, and like Sheridan has already stated, but just with the amount of people being out, like I said, I think everybody just wants to go and get out on this holiday, whether you're a kid or you're an adult or you're a teen.
So I think that's why people become more prone to these dangerous activities, just because there are more people out on the town in general.
All right. Thank you so much, Katie.
Thank you.
So we just had our first few stories, Julia. What's stood out to you so far? You know, honestly, that last one about the emergency rooms, it's always something that happens around the holidays, especially like 4th of July. You always hear
100%.
You always hear about people having to go to the emergency room. It's not hard to believe that, you know, some dumb kids doing some dumb stuff on Halloween. It's bound to happen.
Yeah, no, and it's important to know the precautions to take behind that, because I remember my parents always being like, oh, watch out for cars, or if you're driving on Halloween night, make sure you're driving slow, watch out for people. So yeah, it's a pretty big deal.
Of course. And now we're hopping into our next story here from Luke Swice. He'll be talking about Dracula, one of the most popular Halloween costumes probably of all time. We've been talking a lot about Halloween costumes, probably one of the most popular Halloween figures ever.
Since its inception, the story of Dracula has garnered widespread attention and a timeless fandom among horror enthusiasts. The story has seen numerous adaptations, and its titular character is among the most recognizable horror characters in the world.
People love Dracula. People love to see it. And it's something spooky, but there's also so many... If you've ever read the original novel, it was very sensational in its time, where it was bringing something completely different. It's using diary entries and journal entries to tell a story where not many books at that time were.
Jenna Jansen, who played Mina in UNO's theater production of Dracula, gave some insight on the perception of the character and its influence on monster villains.
An evil villain doesn't necessarily have to look ugly or be like this or be angry immediately. They can be charming. They can have an appeal to them. And I think that's something that Dracula brings to the table.
Dracula practically gave birth to the vampire character archetype. But what led to its inception by fiction writer Bram Stoker?
Dracula came from many origins of folklore.
Some literature historians have cited a 15th century ruler of Wallachia, or modern-day Romania, as an influence on Stoker's titular character. Kevin Barrett, director of the UNO play, shares his thoughts.
Some scholars have tried to point to Stoker being influenced by an actual character from early Eastern history called Vlad the Impaler, but most people believe that's not really accurate. He was drawing on superstitions that were written. A lot of it was written by a woman named Emily Gerard, who put together a book about Transylvania superstitions, and he read that very earnestly and took some of that to heart.
Various interpretations of the story exist today since the publication of the original novel in 1897. Its iconic characters and European setting have led to various analysis about the nature of evil and fear of outsiders.
People that lived on the mainland in England were very suspicious of anybody from the outside. And so that's kind of why this character who comes from Eastern Europe is under scrutiny. It parallels sort of what we're in right now in this country, where there's a lot of fear of people that are coming from across the borders.
As for what continues to draw audiences to Dracula, Mr. Barrett had a couple thoughts on the matter.
I think the couple different things. One would be that dark side that everybody carries, that there's a fear that we have an evil gene within ourselves. I think that's a little bit of it, but also the idea of sort of playing God and being able to live eternally, I think, still fascinates people for some reason.
Dracula continues to be an iconic character and a constant point of reference for the vampire story. Its echoes can be heard across the history of horror, and its status has never wavered. Reporting for MAV Radio, I'm Luke Schweiss.
Stoker's Dracula was moderately successful when first published in 1897, but it was not the author's seminal work during his lifetime. The story grew in popularity after it was adapted for Broadway in the 1920s and saw a blockbuster film adaptation in 1931. A German adaptation was released in 1922 and has seen numerous remakes since. Joining me now is Luke. And Luke, how are Dracula and Nosferatu connected?
Dracula and Nosferatu, the two stories kind of go hand in hand because Nosferatu was an unauthorized adaptation of Dracula, And the filmmakers didn't get permission and actually got sued by the Stoker estate. So it was kind of they didn't get the official rights for the movie or from the book. And so it just kind of has its own identity in the horror sphere. And not a lot of people know that it's not, or that it's connected to the Dracula story.
What is interesting audiences about the upcoming Nosferatu remake coming out in December?
Yeah. So the upcoming remake, is directed by Robert Eggers, and he's kind of established himself in the modern horror sphere. And I think what's kind of drawing audiences to this remake is the interesting cast of characters that are kind of playing these iconic roles. And it's not the first time that Nosferatu has been put on the screen, and I think a modern adaptation is really interesting, will be really interesting to see.
What do you think makes vampires frightening to audiences?
What I think makes them frightening is, I would say, and Jenna kind of mentioned this when I interviewed her, is that the elusiveness or just the aspect of, you know, them not really, you don't really know whether or not a vampire exists. And you don't know if they're hiding it or if they are actually a vampire. And I think that trait really kind of continues to draw audiences, and the fact that they're kind of a secret and a something that people don't know exists.
Thank you, Luke.
Coming up next after this short break, we'll talk more about Dracula, this time from Caden Weber.